my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 479, to be broadcast Wednesday, April 15th on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch.
That would be me.
She's here in the background. You may not be able to hear her, but she is definitely here. So if you're feel free to comment, and Fran or I might be able to respond. So anyway, this is your opportunity to touch base with us if you're listening on Facebook Live right now. If not, and it's an audio file, you can still listen to me. You can still write me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, Spotify, iTunes, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week. This is the same rant as last week and the same rant as the week before. Paying attention yet? For the first time in 4 years, now we are up to $4.12 a gallon for regular gasoline. And last week it was $4, and diesel is now officially $6 a gallon. How's that bike looking right now? Maybe it is time to take a real good look at that. Because if you're doing the average consumption of gasoline, 12 and a half gallons per week, that's the average in the United States. Not maybe you, but it is the average. Okay, it breaks down to $51.50 a week, or roughly a little over $230 a month. Put it all together, and you have a whopping almost $3,000 per year. Take half of that by riding your bicycle back and forth to work 50% of the time. You could save a lot of money, okay? Is that enough to justify buying yourself a new bike or fixing up the old bike or, you know, just taking your bike out and using it for a change? Anyway, that's my rant of the week. I'll leave it there. Oh, and except I do have to mention this. Bicycle parking. I love this. This came from the Urban Cycling Institute. All right. Bicycle parking is not a problem. For those of you who are out there complaining about, why do they have to have all these bike racks everywhere? How come my parking garage now has bike racks in it and I can't park my car there anymore? Parking isn't the problem. Actually, it's an essential part of the solution. Same space, 70 cars will hold 1,000 bicycles. I'll let you do the math. I'll let you figure it out, and I'll stop ranting about this, but the solution to all the problems in the world is the bicycle. More in the show. Okay, let's see. On a positive side, our local club, the Thread City Cyclers, are on the move. We had big turnout on Saturday. Lots of people showed up. Unfortunately, I was not one of them because I had a small medical issue that needed attention that kept me off my bike this weekend. Long story, not going there. One of these days, your old buddy Peddlin' Ron is going to be a very, very healthy old man, and he's going to be able to ride his bike again on a regular basis. It's just frustrating. Anyway, a shout out to Richmond, Virginia. Cycling advocates take bike lane cleaning in their own hands. Very interesting. We'll talk about that later in the show. And let's see. For weeks, the storyline heading into Paris's mayoral election felt familiar. Voters fed up with bike lanes, fed up with traffic restrictions and disappearing parking, were ready to punish the legacy of Anne Hidalgo. Instead, they did the opposite. So anyway, guess what? People in Paris actually like having more bike accessibility. Yay. Well, one of these days, the rest of the world will grow up, and that'll be a really nice thing. And of course, I have to mention this on a positive side. Did anyone see the Paris-Roubaix this weekend? Oh my God, it was great. We'll talk about that later in the show. I'll get there. All right, moving on. Discussion in this morning's indoor cycling class. Should I have tubeless tires on my new bike? Yeah, my friend Karen's getting a brand new bike. She's spending, you know, a whole bunch of money on it, getting herself a really, really nice bike, and it's really lovely and all. She said, do I really need tubeless tires? And that is back to, yes, the same question that we have constantly on this show. Do I need tubeless tires? Well, here's your answer. Well, it's not really an answer, but I'll give you some examples out there. Personally, you're talking to an old retro grouch here, and I am still riding with tubes in my tires if I'm not riding on tubulars. So, yeah, we go way back. I go way back to where retro grouches were first inhabiting the earth. So anyway, I am still not convinced on the tubeless tire deal, even though I know they work really well if installed properly and if using the proper equipment. I'm going to mention both those things because that is an essential to making tubeless work for you. But I'm still a good old tube lover because when I get a flat tire in the back of my bike, I would prefer to just have air come out and not all the goop all over the road and all over my back and all over my bicycle. That's one downside to it. Now, people who have gone tubeless have claimed that it is just virtually maintenance-free and they love it and they'll never go back and on and on and on. And it's not as messy as everybody says it is, blah, blah, blah. I think it's good for some people. I really like my tubes. And if you really want a light tube experience, consider putting a much lighter latex tube inside your tire. You're going to get great performance out of it. Also, stop riding on narrow tires because narrow tires are just so yesterday. We don't want to do narrow tires anymore. We want to do something at least 28C or wider, and that really seems to be the trend. I'm seeing 30C as a pretty commonplace, 30, 32C for most road bikes, recreational and or racing bikes. They're going for a fairly wide tire. Gives you a better ride. It's much more comfortable to ride on. Sure, it's a couple of grams heavier, but who cares if you're comfortable? That's my feeling. And also, comfort can also mean more control. Case in point, Tadej Pogačar, the famous cyclist right now, who seems to be winning all the classics, except this weekend, spoiler alert, he rides a 30-millimeter wide tire. Just so you know. And there's nobody faster than him right now, kind of. I'll talk about that later on. Okay, let's go to the Tour de France riders. Let's talk about this way in our Mechanical Minute and Bike Tips. The vast majority of Tour de France riders now ride on tubeless tires. Technology has been the standard in the pro peloton, favored for its lower rolling resistance, ability to run lower pressures for comfort and grip, and the sealant's ability to prevent punctures, allowing them to avoid slowdowns. So that's where the Tour de France riders are right now. That's where the pros are. A lot of them have converted over. A lot of them were riding up until this point. Not really clinchers. They were riding tubulars, but they are switching over more to tubeless tires. You know, they're great until you hit something really hard with them, and they will literally explode off the rims, putting you on the pavement faster than you can say, why didn't I put some air in my tires this morning? There's the other one. Put some air in your tires before you go out and ride your bike. This is a very simple tip, but it's a tip that really works. You got to top off the tires. What does Fran call it? Fran calls it
Blessing my bike.
Can you bless my bike? She says it every time. Yep, I'll bless your bike. What do I do first? I go right to the tires and put air in the tires. I always just top them off right where I know she needs them. I don't know if she wants them there or not, but I know what works for her. And so far, how many flat tires have you had this year, Fran?
Not.
How many flat tires did you have last year, Fran?
Not.
Okay. How many flat tires did you have the year before, Fran?
I haven't had one in a long time.
So, what are you riding on? Tubeless? No. You're riding on tubes, and you don't get flat tires. Why? Because you have someone who blesses your bike every time you go for a ride. So we top off your tires. We pay attention to tire air pressure. It's really simple, not difficult at all. If you have a question about what air pressure should I be using in my bike, then go to my Bicycle Talk Facebook page and click on the tire pressure link to Silka, and you can put in your body weight, you can put in your riding style, you can put in the size of your tire, and it'll tell you exactly how many PSI you should have in both the front tire and the rear tire. It's great. It's just a really cool tool. And so anyway, check it out. Check it out. It's very, very cool. It's on my my Facebook page. So most teams switch from traditional tubulars to tubeless by 22-23 in that year. Sizes, 28-millimeter tubeless tires have become the norm for road stages. Exceptions, as of 2024, only a few teams, such as Cofidis and Lotto Destiny, were exceptions, often preferring different setups. Safety inserts. Here's a subject that we will talk about a little bit more. Many teams also use tire inserts to keep their tires secure and rideable during a puncture, often adding, at most, a 1 watt penalty. Note experts from Cycling Weekly. If you gotta put a safety insert in your tire to be able to keep the fluid in your tire, put a tube in. Sorry. While tubeless is standard for most, a few riders have stuck with or experimented with newer, lighter options, including the TPU tubes. Oh boy, you don't even want to know. So should I go tubeless on the road? If you're a recreational rider, you know what? It's not going to make any difference. Maybe it'll feel a little bit smoother. Maybe it'll feel a little nicer. From what I'm reading and hearing from people that are in the know out there, they're saying people are going back to tubed tires with latex tubes. Just a thought. It's not necessary that you go that way. If you've been super happy with your tubeless setup and it's worked really well for you and you're not getting flat tires anymore when you were getting them a lot, then great. Stick with tubeless. It's good for you. But I am still on the list of unconvinced riders as far as tubeless goes. I think it's a great, great innovation for mountain biking. I think it's made a huge game changer if you're running super low pressure in your tires like you do on a mountain bike. Not so much for a cyclocross bike. I've seen nothing but problems with tubeless with cyclocross bikes. And gravel bikes, it's questionable there too. I would not do it. Since you have such a wide tire that you're now using on those bikes, you really get a lot more protection, and it's just not as messy. Anyway, for what it's worth. And also the expense of a tubeless tire and tubeless rims to go along with it and the sealant that goes along with that is greater than putting a tube in your tire. And what happens when you get a flat that is just so bad that you can't get home? You put a tube in your tire. Do I need to say this anymore? Anyway, I would say don't do it. And in relation to my friend, she's a very light rider. She's not very heavy, so therefore with a nice 30 millimeter, maybe 32 millimeter tire, I don't think she'd ever need to worry about putting any sealant in her tires. Here's another thing too that people forget about. You can put inside of a butyl tube, you can put sealant in the tube, and then if you puncture, it'll seal. So, you know, that was the old school way of doing things. But everybody would not avoid it because it would add 10 or 15 extra grams to their wheel. If you're concerned about the weight that much, you need to really think seriously about getting a sponsor and getting on a professional bicycle racing team. Otherwise, it really doesn't matter. Anyway, we'll move on. So Then the last thing I have here, and we're still in tips, is just making sure we got this. Get your bike spring ready, because it's spring and everyone's finally riding their bikes and it's here. And before you hit the pedals, you want to make sure your bike's ready for the season. I go over this every year this time of year. Check your wheels. Check the air, the alignment, the safety. Make sure your wheels are true. They're not going side to side against and rubbing against brake blocks. Should you still have old rim brakes? Another thing that I still have on my bicycle. you guys with the disc brakes, you don't need to worry so much about the wobbling wheel, except you really shouldn't have a wobbling wheel. It should be straight. So, and you might want to check your spoke tension, make sure nothing's loosened up over the winter, whatever. Hopefully you've done this long before the first nice day on the bike, but you should also be inspecting for damages like bulges, large cuts, cracks, or frayed sidewalls. And that tells you need new tires. You probably should have done that back in January. Not that I'm, a big promoter of those that, visiting your local bike shop when they really need you to visit them. But anyway, should have taken care of all this by now. But if you haven't, a clean, well-lubed chain keeps your ride efficient and quiet. And so you might want to take care of that if you haven't taken care of it. If it's been sitting over the winter, the lube that is on the chain, whether it be a combination lube of some sort or whatever, it might get dried out, so you might want to add a little bit more to it. Just little things like that. Check your chain and your drivetrain, and hopefully your drivetrain isn't at the point where the last time you rode your bike it was skipping a lot and you couldn't figure out why. You should have taken care of it back then, but that's beside the point. And then tuning your gears, which comes along with that, you want to make sure that your gears are shifting smoothly and silently. Did you replace a chain last year? Did you need to replace a chain last year? Did you replace a cassette last year? Did you need to replace a cassette last year? Maybe now is the time. So anyway, these are all things that can be figured out at your local bike shop. So I strongly encourage you to visit your local bike shop if you have any mechanical needs. Or if you are very good at this sort of thing and you have all the proper tools, including a chain gauge, which tells you how much your chain is worn. If you don't have one of those or you don't know what I'm talking about, please bring it to your local bike shop. Brake levers. Make sure when you squeeze the brake levers, you've got brakes. Simple stuff, right? Spin the wheels. Make sure nothing's rubbing when you're doing that. You want to make sure. And, you may want to go through and tighten every bolt. Maybe not. I used to pull my seat post every year, and I still do that. Pull the seat post. I put a little bit of, there's a material you can put on a carbon post. It goes into a carbon frame or any other frame that will keep your post from adhering to the inside of your bike frame. Yeah, that does happen. You don't want to know about that. That turns into a nightmare. You want to just check on all the rotating parts and make sure that everything is nice and snug. The wheels, the bearings aren't loose and rattling back and forth. No rattles. Your bike should be the quietest thing you've ever experienced in your life. It should be really quiet and peaceful when you ride it down the road. You shouldn't hear anything. It shouldn't be talking to you. It shouldn't be crying at you. It should be quiet. The most noise you should hear from your bicycle are the tires on the road. Not the chain, the tires on the road. If you hear the chain, that might be an indication of needing more lube or whatever. And then just ready, set, go. Ride your bike. Have fun. That's what it's all about. So hopefully everyone has been there by now and they have gotten out on their bike and they've experienced the fact that their bike is working just great, which is super important. And there you go. That's it. So let's see here. What do we have? Moving on. Richmond, Virginia. Let's see, is that the one? So, Richmond, Virginia, very, very interesting. They've got bike lanes in Richmond, Virginia, as we have bike lanes in a lot of different places. And over the wintertime, you get sand from sanding of the roads if there's snow. And yes, Richmond does get snow in the wintertime, probably more this year than they've had in a long time. And, there's glass and debris, and it's all in the bike lanes. Well, John Merton knows a thing or two about Richmond's bike lanes. He's been riding in Richmond since the fall of 1990, and he would bike to classes at VCU and work back at that time. And now, as a resident of Forest Hill neighborhood, Merton still bikes to work. He manages a restaurant that his wife owns, and this year's winter weather left the city with bike lanes in really poor shape. What happened this year, leaves ended up in the bike lanes. There's no process for getting them out. When the snow and ice came, it just got worse. There's blocks where they're either dangerously slippery or unrideable. Now everything is just sandy, but hopefully that'll wash away. But it takes time for that to wash away. So there's an official city tool for clearing bike lanes. It's an $80,000 bike lane sweeper called MadVac LS175, which was dubbed MF Broom after the late rapper MF Doom, and MF stands for Metal Face. But to many cyclists who ride, MF Broom has been missing in action. But the knowledge basically was that the city has a bike lane sweeper, but people say they personally have never seen it in action. So what happened is these folks got together and they ended up, they made posts of a people-powered bike lane sweeper. So they took it into their hands and they created and posted it on a GoFundMe page, which was shared by local cyclists and Bike Walk Richmond, Virginia, Outposts, Bikes, and others. And they hit a goal of raising more than $6,000 in a week, and they got a bunch of donations, and before you knew it, they were buying themselves a new machine. It's a hybrid model, and it included some replacement parts, spare brushes and things like that. And it came from Canada, because they have things like this in Canada. Shout out to Canada. God, they're so smart up there.
Thank you.
I love the Canadians.
Thank you.
As a matter of fact, I have one living in my house. It's just wonderful. So it's right behind me, right? So the All-American Fran-Canadian. Franadian? I don't know what that means.
Oh,
anyway,
that's funny.
You could be a Franadian. Yes, you could be a Franadian. So anyway, they got this great machine, and it's really cool. The sweeper attaches to a bike, okay, preferably a cargo or an e-bike. That's easier to pull up hills and empty the bins. Two brushes sweep debris out of the way up onto two compartments through a battery-powered unit. And this guy has a form, and volunteers will basically sweep whatever areas they want to, and adding that he'll make it so there's no overlap in areas. Definitely going to be a volunteer. This is what they have. It's really cool. What a neat idea. Jeffrey Hagen. Hi, Jeff. How you doing? Anyway, people want bike lanes to be clean and safe, and people who ride regularly understand that this is not an inconvenience. It's a hazard. So very, very cool. Big shout out to Richmond, Virginia, and MF Broom, their new apparatus for sweeping the bike lanes. Pedal powered, I might add. Very cool. So I saw that, and I just thought that would be a cool thing to mention here on the Bicycle Talk Show. And let's see what else we have here. I'm going to go to Paris. I'm going to make the big jump here. Okay. We're going to go to Paris, and we're going to add that back in March of 2026, Paris voted for People First Streets again. This is the second time they've done this. The mayoral vote was out there, and there was a victorious socialist candidate, Emmanuel Gregoire, and he gave a victory speech. riding a bicycle, a symbolic nod to Paris's ongoing commitment to pro-cycling and environmental policies. Surrounded by supporters, he declared, "Paris is not and will never be a far-right city." Grégoire was projected to win with about 52% of the vote, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so the outcome matters for far beyond Paris. Over the past decade, the French capital has undergone one of the most ambitious urban transformations in the world, a massive expansion of cycling infrastructure, more than 300 school streets closed to car traffic, widespread greening initiatives, and a deliberate shift away from car dominance. Oh, I love this stuff. Hey, Jeff, how's the maple syrup running, by the way? My cousin Jeff has an operation now. He built a sugar shack. He's got an evaporator, and it's kind of cool. We need to talk, but one of these days we'll get together again. But anyway, I'm excited to hear how your maple sugaring went this year. So Paris has stuck with it because they really, really like what's going on here. Now, I'm going to mention something about Paris. Paris is another one of those cities that has instituted congestion pricing. So, yeah, you want to drive your car into the heart of Paris, into the really, really busy areas, you pay extra money to do it, just like in New York City. By the way, that was a home run also. A home run meaning that all the extra money collected goes into building and reconstructing infrastructure for those who are using other forms of transportation. This is not rocket science, folks. It's simple, simple common sense. So really cool stuff going on in Paris. I had to give them a shout out because I thought it was just really cool that they're staying on top of their concerns for all of their people, and it happens to be directly related to bicycles. Very cool. And you're listening to Bicycle Talk, so here we are. All right, the next thing on my list today, let's see here. The bicycle business. I'm just going to mention this, and I'm also going to probably put it into my calendar too, but just so that you know, the Sea Otter Classic is about a week away. It's April 16th through the 19th. It's actually coming up in the next few days. And if you've never been to the Sea Otter Classic, it's in Monterey, California. I have been there because I was in the industry and I had companies I was working for that planned sales meetings around it. Brilliant idea. Bring us out to the Sea Otter. Really great. Unfortunately, when you go to the Sea Otter, if they bring you out, you're probably going to have to work there in one of the booths. But that's all right. You can do it. But it is a really, really cool thing. It's at the Laguna Seca Raceway and it is packed with exhibitors and consumers coming in by the thousands, make their way to this four-day expo. So that's April 16th through the 19th. So there's a really big, big shout out there. Another thing in the bicycle industry, Tim Blumenthal, who I knew way back when, and he's a journalist and a non-cycling nonprofit leader, master storyteller, and nicest man in the world, they say, died March 30th at 70 after a two-year battle with cancer. So that's a real shame. He lived up in Cornwall, Vermont, and I think he was a writer for Bicycling Magazine for a long time. But anyway, sad to see Tim go. Okay, I'm going to click out of this, and we're going to go to moving on. Bicycle racing and the Paris-Roubaix. Let's talk a little bit about the Paris-Roubaix. The world's most difficult one-day race on the pro calendar. And so why is the Paris-Roubaix so hard? Why is the queen of the classics standing alone in difficulty among one-day races in the pro calendar? Well, if anyone's been watching bicycle racing as long as I have, you know exactly what the Paris-Roubaix is. The Paris-Roubaix is also known by its nickname, the Hell of the North. It is just a a ridiculously difficult 160-mile one-day race. And it goes through cobbled sections of France and Belgium, basically. And it is just a nightmare race to ride. And it has the cobbles of 260 kilometers are punctuated with 30 cobble sections in the men's race, totaling 54.8 kilometers, with the longest two at 3.7 kilometers in length. The race starts in Compiègne, north of Paris, and is tarmacked roads around 100 kilometers before the first cobble section. The cobbled, oh, by the way, in the first 100 kilometers, they finished it in like under 2 hours. It's insane. That's insane. 62 miles in under two hours. It was ridiculously fast, which is possibly one of the reasons for all the flat tires this year. But anyway, we'll get to that. So the first cobbles, they're numbered down from 30 to 1 as the race approaches Roubaix, and they're graded from 1 to 5 stars according to their difficulty. There's 3 5-star cobbled sections, with the most famous one that's encountered, Sector 19, the 2.3-kilometer Trouée d'Arenbarg, which is the straight, narrow, and has particularly uneven cobbles. Did you know that in France there are people that actually maintain the cobbles? It's all true. They've been around for centuries because they're old roads, but there's actually a group that maintains the cobbles, and that's you know, it's a volunteer organization, and they're, you know, constantly fixing and replacing cobbles on the road. Crazy people. Anyway, keeping momentum and you pick up your line and riding fast over cobbles is crucial, because the bike will then, it tends to float over the surface if you know what you're doing. Also, if you have your tire pressure right? That's the whole idea. There's a lot of vibration. There's a lot of, especially in your forearm areas, if you've ever ridden a lot of gravel or ridden cyclocross, you know what I'm talking about. You get all that shaking, and your arms actually get itchy from it. It's weird. But anyway, so trying to not lose your balance on any uneven surfaces is also very, very difficult. Now, crashes are frequent, particularly if conditions are wet, as punctures and mechanical problems. I'm going to also say that crashes are also very frequent if conditions are super dry, which they were this year. Why is that? Because sand. There's like a dust that gets on the top of the cobbles, and it's like icy slick. It's weird. But it's super dry, and so they definitely had a lot of crashes this year. What they had more than crashes this year was they had an enormous amount of flat tires. Now, I'm not pointing any fingers in any directions here, but I did talk earlier on the show about tubeless tires, and I am not going to say that it was a tubeless tire situation. I would think if you were really smart, you would have liners of some sort inside of your tubeless tires if you were to use tubeless tires. But there's a couple of theories here as to why there were so many flat tires this year. And one of them is because the race was so fast, and the speed of which the riders were hitting the cobbles was so fast, that they would immediately go from a super smooth surface to a cobbled surface, which was very, very bumpy, and the tires would bottom out and pinch out. Again, I don't know exactly what it was, but there were riders complaining that the speed was so fast that they couldn't see far enough ahead to know where to ride on the cobbled surfaces to be able to, so to speak, pick your line as you're riding through. And so there were, Egan Bernal has a podcast, and he said something about the speed being one of the factors. So it was very fast. Vanderpoel's winning times in the three most recent races approached an average speed of 47 kilometers per hour. do the math. It's 40 kilometers an hour is 25 miles an hour. So do the math. They're fast. They're really, really fast. So they're ranging somewhere between 25 and 30 miles an hour on cobbles, okay, which is in itself a very, very difficult thing to do. Now, that's your average. So obviously, they slow down a little bit when they hit the cobbles, but then they hit the smooth roads, and they're blasting down these roads. It's crisscrossed by railway level crossings. Riders can be stopped by trains passing, which can halt a promising breakaway or chasing group and break the rhythm. Riders bypassing the closed barriers are disqualified. Cobbled sections are actually actively used roads, so they get churned up by agricultural vehicles, which increases dirt and unevenness. And then there's the dust, okay? The dust, you're going to have mud or you're going to have dust. If it's rained, the Paris-Roubaix can become incredibly muddy, and the riders arriving at the finish line are caked head to foot with only their eyes unsmothered. There have been some epically muddy editions of the race in the past. And let's see, apart from the 2021 race, which was run in October rather than April due to COVID, most recent years have seen dry conditions. Here, dust from the leading vehicles, motorcycles, and other riders replaces mud, but it still cakes on riders. It's just amazing. In most races, the protected rider has a team with them for much of the race to help pace and protect them. The Paris-Roubaix is more likely to be won solo or in a small group with crashes, mechanicals, and punctures splitting the field. That can make the race much more difficult and result in wild card winners, or it can favor the most powerful and competitive cobbled classic specialists. There's a mix of both in the winners list through the years. So this year, those people would be Tadej Pogačar, who was out to get his last classic race of the year because he's won all the other ones, and he is just in phenomenally good shape right now. And so this is one he has never won, and he was after it. He really wanted it. He flatted out. He got back on his bike. It was just a mechanical nightmare, but he's Tadej Pogačar, so he kept grinding away. Matthew Vanderpoel, same thing. Matthew Vanderpoel had a problem with his bike, and he got a replacement bike from a teammate, and it didn't have the right pedals on it, and then he had to wait for a team. It was just like one thing after another. All through that, another cyclocross expert and good Grand Tour rider who has been around for a long time, a guy by the name of Wout van Aert, one of my favorite riders in the Peloton. Wout was doing okay. I don't know if he even had any mechanical issues, but he's an experienced cyclocross rider, so he's really good on the rough stuff and knows how to get his way through. And at the end, it came down to the fact that it was him and it was Tadej Pogačar and Matthew Vanderpoel and a few others chasing. It was very close. They came into the the other thing about the Paris-Roubaix is it finishes in the velodrome in Roubaix. So it finishes in a big, huge stadium. It's very cool. They came in, they were right with each other. Both Tadej and Wout were together. And I was on the phone with my friend Billy, and I said, it's Van Aert's. He's got it because he's got a better sprint at the end. And that's exactly what happened. So sorry if I spoil alerted you. You haven't gone back to YouTube to watch it yet. But please go to YouTube and watch it. It's well worth it. It's very, very entertaining. It's a really, really cool race. But and I was somewhat relieved to see that Tadej Pogačar did not win this one, because it's just been kind of boring this year with him winning all those races. And of course, we talked about Tadej and why is he so good and what's going on. I have friends of mine sending me things. Well, you know, starting to look a little more like the Lance years. And I don't think he's doping. I don't think any of them are anymore. There is such a fine tune to the condition of these athletes now than there used to be from years ago. Their nutrition has completely changed. They have each and every one of the riders have their own special nutritional plan. They've really got it down to a science now, and they're getting the most from them that they possibly can. That's why the Peloton's faster. That's why all these riders are performing so much better. They're watching every single thing that they do to make sure that they're ready to race. So I think it's kind of cool. It's definitely a good thing. Anyway, it was a great race to watch. If you got to watch it, definitely want to do it. There is a women's version too. Unfortunately, I did not do my research on the women's version, and I went outside to work in my backyard when that race came on, so I didn't get to see it. But maybe I'll have some highlights from next week. The thing is, so what do you ride in the Paris-Roubaix? Do you ride your gravel bike? Do you ride a cyclocross bike? Do you ride a, you know, your gravel tires? You know, do you ride on... You don't ride a mountain bike, for sure. Not fast enough. Definitely not a fast enough machine. But there's a lot of different things that people do, and they try different ideas to ride. Most of the top riders were riding on aero road bikes. Can you believe it? Because a lot of the new bikes are cut for wider tires now. They're built so that they can take that wider tire, so they can use their wider tires, but they could still get the performance out of their aero racing bike. I don't get it, but that's what Pogacar rode on, and others too. So who knows? There were some old hacks that were happening, but there was also some new tech out there, and they have this thing, and I just don't know how to explain it. But let me see if I got it up on my screen here. They have this odd-looking attachment. You can tell that a rider is riding with it, but they're using a tubeless tire, right? And if you take a look at the valve where the air pressure is being put into the tire, you see not one, but two valves, all right? One of the valves is for the liner that goes into the inside of the tire. The other valve is for the tire itself and the pressure that's being maintained inside. Never seen anything quite like it. There were a couple of teams that were using it this year. They have currently, the UCI in its infinite wisdom, has currently banned the use of the tire pressure changer. Remember, there was a weird thing last year that riders were able to change the air pressure in their tire with a little push of a button on their handlebars while riding the bike. Interesting. Very interesting. The UCI has decided that that's not such a good idea, and they don't want to do that anymore. Why isn't it a good idea? It's not a safety issue. We don't really know why it's not a good idea. I would rather they spent more time being concerned about safety for the riders than being concerned about their 6-inch socks. But we'll move on. You've heard that one from me before, I'm sure. So the tire picks for the Paris-Roubaix this year. I figured we had a little discussion about this morning. Unfortunately, we were so involved with should I ride tubeless or should I ride regular clincher tires that I didn't get a chance to really get deep into this conversation. But the question is, The question was, why were there so many flats, and what was the tire pick? So for most of the 2010s, 28-millimeter tires ruled the roost in the Hell of the North, because it was the widest tire that would fit in a traditional rim brake caliper, because back then we only had caliper brakes. We didn't have disc brakes. So come to the end of the rim brake era, and you go to disc brakes, and you can run a wider tire and get them on and off the bike super quick. Well, not super quick, but pretty quick. Not as quick as the old traditional quick release, but anyway, so that became happening, and then we could graduate up to a 32-millimeter tire, which is a little bit wider, which is kind of cool because it's also got a lot more cushion to it, and you can run lower tire pressure on it. So This is the first year that many teams have taken a step in their tire width choices, step up in the tire width choices. So you're starting to see one more addition to the rides that you're seeing on the pavé, on the cobbles. So that's kind of what they really went towards, is these kind of linered tube-less tires with a liner in the inside. Once again, why put a liner in the inside if you could just put a tube in there? I'm not even going to talk about that. Now, why not put a little bit of sealant inside the tube? That would work too. And then you don't have to worry about your tire exploding off the rim, and now you're riding on just carbon and or aluminum on the surface, which is incredibly dangerous and stupid. But why? So it seems like the real big thing is pushing the width of the tire as far as the UCI will allow you to do it. And that's where the real problem is the UCI does step in here, and they are talking about they are talking about tire width and their concern. They don't want too wide a tire because we don't really know why. But let me go back to this. I did find this. I thought I had it up on my screen. I wanted to mention it. The so this thing, I don't know what they call it. It's Lidl Trek is using this. And last year they used a new SRAM Red system with an XPLR rear derailleur, which is like a mountain style derailleur, and they modified it to make it 12 speed from a 13 speed with an additional limit screw, blah blah blah. This year they to keep up their reputation for an innovation intact, they also spotted with the all new double bubble tire safety system. And like I said, it looks like two valves coming out, it's two valves coming out of the actual rim. So it just looks like, I'm just going to do that. And I'll try to put a copy of this picture up on the screen here so you guys, on my Bicycle Talk Facebook page, so you can see what it is. But anyway, it's just an odd system, and it's a small, high-pressure, low-expansion, reinforced TPU tube that sits inflated to 87 psi inside the tubeless tire carcass to keep the tire bead forced onto the rim and prevent it from burping, because that is a problem you have with the tubeless tire. It also acts like a run-flat system to a point, and if it's punctured, it would simply expel its air into the main tire cavity. Key giveaway is the dual valve at the rim. Otherwise, the system would be totally invisible to the naked eye. So it's very interesting. Whether it worked or not, I don't know. There were a lot of flat tires, and I would be real interested in finding out whether or not those particular systems were failing or not. Did you see a Westerly Rhode Island town councilman suggested that they ban all bikes in Westerly? You gotta be kidding, Chris. You gotta be kidding me. Well, you know, if you guys need somebody to come down and make a voice for cycling, give me a shout. But I think that Famous Amos is probably all over it at this point. Yeah, the Famous Amos is Amos Brumble from Brumble's Bicycle Shop. That could be next week's discussion. Keep me in touch on that. Either you can send me a text directly, or you can even give me a call if you want. And I would love to know what's going on there, because that's just not right.
It's insane. Westerly is a beach town.
Not only is Westerly a beach town, but what is the main population of Westerly, Rhode Island? Let's point a direction here. There's an ethnicity that moved to Westerly that dominates that town in many ways, and it is Italian. And the Italians are into bicycles. Did you know that? Did you happen to know that? Anyway, I'll send you the link. Thanks, Chris. I do appreciate that. I cannot believe that there's still people that have that mindset left in this world. anyway, they're there. I'm here to prevent that type of problem. So yeah, that's really, that's an outright shame that you would think that, you know, and this is exactly what was going on in New York City. This is what was going on in Paris. This is what was going on in Minneapolis years ago. People that were defiantly against bicycles and having it happen, and then they turned their entire cities around and became famous for what they've done for cycling. This is not a it's something that doesn't even it doesn't need the discussion. It shouldn't need the discussion. I'm guessing that someone with a very large vehicle got very offended when they couldn't get their very large vehicle around a bicycle, and that's where this all started. But anyway, I can't even begin. That makes me really angry when I hear stuff like this. Westerly, Rhode Island. I grew up in southeastern Connecticut. I grew up in Ledyard, Connecticut. I used to ride my bike to Westerly all the time because I used to ride my bike to the beach. Westerly was a great place to ride a bicycle. It was wonderful. It's down by the shore. It's relatively flat around there. It's really, really, it's beautiful. You're right along either the river that goes up into Westerly, or you're on the shoreline if you go all the way out to Watch Hill. It's gorgeous. It's made for cycles. It's made for bicycles. It's also made for lots and lots and lots of tourists, and they get lots of tourists there. It's also made for, what's her name, that woman who sings about the bad relationship she has all the time and now is in a relationship with that football player. What's
Taylor.
Her name? Taylor Swift, yes. She lives in Westerly sometimes. And the people of Westerly, they all complain when she's there because it completely disrupts traffic. And, you know, you want to get rid of the problem, get rid of Taylor Swift. Oh, man. Anyway, yeah, send me the link, Chris. We'll have some fun discussion about this. I just can't believe they would do that. So, anyway, I got off track there a little bit, but... Anyway, it looks like a lot of the bikes were being used were aero bikes, which seems really kind of crazy to me, but there is a thing here from Bike Radar that said that Tade was racing on an enormous 38 millimeter wide tire. I didn't think they were allowing those. Maybe. It says here, no tubeless inserts. No tubeless inserts. Tade did not ride tubeless. Yay. Or inserts. Maybe he rode tubeless, but no inserts. Let's see here. I'm reading it right now. Fitted with Continental tires. La, la, la. And I'm not seeing any. Okay. Tire tech has been the key talking point of Paris-Roubaix, with riders opting for even wider options in recent years. 32 has become the de facto norm, but Pogačar takes it further than anyone opting for a 35 millimeter tire. Actually, he used a 35 millimeter tire, but because he was using a 25 millimeter rim, it pushed out closer to 38 millimeters. So 40 millimeter tire, it generally sits outside the limit. So a 38 millimeter tire is likely to be as close as you can possibly get. And they show pictures of it on his aero fork, and they're barely fitting in there, but they fit. So anyway, yeah. That's what's going on there. That's very, very interesting. He will not run inserts, and the brand doesn't recommend using inserts in its wheels. And that is very interesting. So anyway, Tade rode on almost a 38 millimeter tire. Wide, wide, wide. Love to see what the air pressure is, but you know, Gotcha's not real good about giving out information about himself or anything that he is doing, because he is a top secret experiment, that man is. Anyway, and he is really, really fast, and he doesn't want to let anyone know why he is so fast. I can tell you right now that he has, as of last week's show, I talked to you about his VO2 max, and it is off the charts, or as high in the charts as you could possibly get. So it's pretty amazing. Anyway, enough of that. We got to move on here because we are simply running out of time. It's amazing how that happens. So, the other thing here, that's pretty much all I've got to talk about. So I'm going to move right on into events. And one of the first things on the list here, of course, is something I mentioned earlier, the Sea Otter Classic, which is coming up on April 16th through the 19th. We have one more Frozen Four left trading race here in Connecticut, and that will be April 18th. And I think that's in Farmington, Connecticut. Not 100% sure. Go to Bike Reg for more information. Ride the East is officially open for registration. The East Coast Greenway Alliance and Trust for Public Land on Saturday, May 16th. We roll through the Airline State Park Trail and soak in Connecticut's most gorgeous landscapes. And once again, you can go to greenway.org is where you can go and find out more about that. And the Giro d'Italia will be May 8th through May 31st. The Tour de France will be July 4th through July 26th. And the Ride of Silence, the No Words Spoken, and worldwide celebration of, not really a celebration, but a recognition of those who were either hit by a motorized vehicle and survived on their bicycle, or hit and did not survive while riding on their bicycle. It will be May 20th, 7 p.m. worldwide, and we will be offering a leg of that right here in Storrs, Connecticut at the Town Hall parking lot or E.O. Smith parking lot for overflow parking, and it will be at 7 p.m. on May 20th. I'll keep announcing it as we go along. So anyway, let's move on to finishing points. Give me your opinion. Are you ready to park that car or truck yet? I mean, gas prices, man. If that doesn't scare you, please, something to get you to come to your senses and realize that bicycling is the way to go. Ah, and did you see the Paris-Roubaix? Oh boy, that was a great race. It was fun to watch, I gotta say. I love watching bike racing, and that one's good. If you haven't seen it, YouTube is the place to see a lot of great European bicycle racing. Remember, bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. Cycling is an easier and safer option for more people because when more people ride, people are happier, they're healthier, our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. So do your part and help somebody enjoy know the joy of bicycling. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. We got to get loud. We got to get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride. And do your part. Stand up in front of your town council. Have a conversation. Hey, take the Pedal and Run Challenge. Consider parking your car for one day and ride your bike instead. You will surprise yourself. And remember, whether you're riding your bike or driving a car, please be safe and kind. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. Woo-hoo! If you are watching on Facebook Live, feel free to comment. You can send an email to me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you want to contribute information to the show? Just send me an email. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. Get on your bikes now!